Good morning, or afternoon, everyone, depending on where you are. Thank you for joining us for this edition of our monthly educational webinar, where we typically invite and speak with different experts from a variety of industries to educate us and educate our audience. Today's webinar is no exception. It's titled The Waterfall of Priorities: How to Stop Analyzing and Start Investing. I'm excited to have our presenter, Michael Miller, the owner of Everland Capital, with us today. I've known Michael for a number of years. He's a real estate investor in his own right. He's known for his innovative thinking and problem-solving in the complex world of real estate financing, among others. So I'm happy to have Michael share his expertise with us. But before we get started, I have my disclaimer that we have to read out loud to everyone. The Entrust Group does not provide any investment advice or endorse any products. All information and materials are for educational purposes only. All parties are encouraged to consult with their attorneys, accountants, financial advisors before entering any type of investment. Today's agenda, I'll hand it over to Mike in a bit. He's going to be explaining the problem, introducing the waterfall of priorities, covering the strategy scorecard, analyzing a case study, and then we'll have some time, hopefully, for some Q&A. If you have any questions, please type in your questions. We'll get to them as time permitted, and depending on where we are on the presentation, Mike might just come in and answer some of those questions for you. So I'm your host, Manzoor Gaucher. I've been with the Entrust Group for over 20 years now, actually. I've been working with our referral partners and clients alike to educate them on the benefits of self-directed retirement plans and help them navigate their complex alternative investments. I'm CISP certified, which is a certification in our industry that's very highly regarded. A little bit about the Entrust Group for those of you out there that in our audience are not familiar with us. We're one of the oldest and the largest self-directed IRA administrators. We provide administrative and record-keeping services for clients who wish to invest in alternative assets, such as real estate, private equity, private lending, precious metals, and more. Most of our staff has the prestigious, as I mentioned, the CISP certifications. We've got a lot of education, including our monthly education webinar. We have about 24,000 and growing active investors with over $6 billion assets under administration. And for over 40 years, we have empowered our investors to take charge of their retirement plans by allowing them to invest in alternative investments, typically unavailable through traditional banks and brokerage firms. One thing that we differentiate ourselves from our competitors out there is that single point of contact. Our regional offices with that dedicated point provides that seamless and quick service to our clients, which is pivotal in our industry. So time now to hand off the mic to Michael with his presentation. So we're all looking forward to this. Michael, welcome.
Hey, thanks, Manzoor. Thanks, Andrew and team. It's a privilege to do this. We've been, as Manzoor said, we've been friends and working together with the Entrust Group for a number of years now. And I got to say, as a real estate investor, I can really attest to that differentiator, that single point of contact. Manzoor and his team has been instrumental in helping us to help our investors deploy capital, and it's been remarkable too. I've worked with lots of custodians, and we are now exclusively with the Entrust Group, not because we get anything for saying that, but because we really believe in the value prop and the level of service they provide. So really fun for me to be here and get to present. I'll introduce myself here real quickly. Manzoor did. I'm a banker turned investor. You might look at me on the screen and go, you don't look anything like a banker. I vowed that the day I left bank of America that I would not do my hair or wear a suit and tie ever again. So you get what you get here. But I am first and foremost a father, a husband. You see my family on the screen. One thing I love to share, a little fun fact, is we are an adoption family. My mom was adopted. I was adopted. My three kids are adopted. My wife is an adoption consultant. We run nonprofit. Working with orphanages and orphan care in Latin America. It's a big part of our why. It's a big part of who we are. As a matter of fact, our company's North Star or mission is to build companies that build and restore family. And so that's why we do all that we do. Beyond that, I'm also a real estate investor. I left a nearly 20-year career as a senior leader in Bank of America. I became a full-time real estate investor. My kind of claim to fame is that, I got started and built a portfolio. We bought a little over 10 million in single family and small multifamily our first year as a real estate company. And we did that largely with none of our own money. We did that with outside investors, creative finance strategies, and some of that out of the box thinking. We don't syndicate, we own our portfolio. So, it's not, 20 million that I think we have today maybe pales in comparison to some of my syndicator friends that have 200 million, but we own 100% of our portfolio. We have done a lot of work building several companies, and including a lot of this type of work, which is to empower Main Street people to invest and to do money different, to find alternative ways to invest. And I think you're all here to learn a little bit about that. We also host, just a little shout out, we host a podcast called the Dead Presidents Club. You can find that on YouTube. We always say that money's not scary. It's just a bunch of dead presidents. And I interview mostly in the real estate space. I interview a lot of different leaders, professionals, et cetera. So you guys are welcome to check us out there. Let me set this up a little bit different. This might be different than the typical investor webinar. I'm not going to talk about any particular strategy. The case studies I'll use are around real estate because I am indeed a real estate guy. But whether you're looking at any type of alternative asset from private equity, precious metals, or if you're still in the Wall Street model of stocks, bonds, and mutual funds, what we're going to talk about today is a common thread that I find throughout all or many of the investors that I interact with, especially as we do coaching and consulting and helping people figure out, like, how do I move my journey forward in accomplishing my financial goals? What we find is that people often are stuck. And you guys have probably heard the term analysis paralysis or decision fatigue or all of these different kind of terms that get thrown out. What I've discovered is that they can typically be distilled down to one problem, and that problem is not an information problem. Lord knows there is a abundance of information that exists. I could become a YouTube expert on just about anything today, but the problem with the information era is that information doesn't equal results. Action does. And the distance between information and action is often in decision. And the analysis paralysis and the fear that prevents people from taking decisive action, in my experience, is largely connected to a lack of clarity. I would say that the biggest bottleneck on anybody's road to success or action in any decision they make, whether it's investing or life or goals or whatever, is this lack of clarity. It says it on the screen. But you've probably read the books. You've probably watched the webinars. You've probably ran 100 numbers on 100 deals and still haven't pulled the trigger. And I think the lie that gets told to ourselves is that we're lazy. It's not lazy. It's not a lack. What you don't lack is intelligence. What you don't lack is drive. What you lack is a specific, functional, precise outcome that you're looking for. It's an old Hal Elrod quote that says that you can accomplish any outcome that you want to achieve by simply defining the target, identifying the steps to achieve it, and then repeating those steps in perpetuity until successful. And in real estate, we say it like this: the biggest problem with real estate is there's a million ways to make money in real estate. You just have to choose one, and what you work will work. And in the process of having this conversation so many times with so many different types of people, what we've landed on is this waterfall analogy that we're going to use today of priorities to help people break through the information consumption into action so that they can actually move down the field towards their goals. I've already said this. Why most smart investors freeze is that indecision, right? It's competing objectives. It's getting onto YouTube and having the one talking head say this and the next talking head say that. And you know, somebody might tell you that real estate is dead. The next guy tells you that we're in the best era of real estate in our lifetime. And the information freezes us. And what we're trying to do today is help you go through a just a very succinct, actionable process to get kind of a form of tunnel vision to go, I am going to get so laser focused on this outcome, this strategy. I'm going to become so clear on what I want to accomplish that no matter what other information or shiny object shows up in my purview, I know that I am focused on one thing. And here's the hard truth. The perfect strategy doesn't exist. And chasing it is likely why you feel stuck at times. So today's a little bit different. And at the end, we'll give time for Q&A if you guys want to ask questions about a specific strategy or a specific real estate endeavor or anything in my expertise. I'm happy to answer those questions. But our presentation today is really to help Main Street people, people like you and I, figure out how to make institutional style decisions, move our action forward, move our plan forward so that we can actually start seeing results instead of being stuck in the rat race of indecision. So here's the analogy that I like to use. And I kind of created this on accident. Hopefully it makes sense to you, but it seems to have been helpful to a lot of people we've worked through. And it's this concept of the waterfall of priorities. What I find is that every investor has the same three goals. Typically, we all have to figure out how to make money today. We all want to build wealth for tomorrow, and we all want some form of passivity or freedom. This is the framework. We're all looking at the same end goals. We want to make a lot of money or make enough money, whatever the definition of success is for you. We want to build wealth and legacy, whether it be for retirement or for future generations or whatever your legacy plan is. And whether it's today or down the road, we want freedom. We want our time back. And eventually, if we do this right, we can have all three. But the way you build each of these priority is different, and you build them one at a time. And this is where an area of that kind of analysis paralysis can come into play because it's like, well, I want to make money today, but I also want to give a bunch of money to my grandkids. And those are both amazing goals. And I hope that we can help you achieve them. But recognizing that the mechanism by which I do one is not the same mechanism by which I do the other. And those can be competing demands of our time, focus, and energy. So let me break them down for you real quick. So priority one, right? And by the way, I put them in this order. That doesn't mean that this is the necessary order that's relevant to you. It's just the order in which they make sense to me. You choose the order or the waterfall of your own priorities. So the first one is active income. Pretty obvious, right? This is either to replace or supplement your active income. This is this is the eating your bread, so to speak. This is how I pay my bills. This is how I provide for my family. This is how I take vacation. Cash flow that you live on this year, not this decade. And speak the money matters, right? If the if I'm like hyper focused on getting out of my W-2 and I want to become a full-time investor, and I'm busy out here focusing on strategies that are designed and built for long-term wealth, I'm going to be successful at neither of them because I won't be able to sustain my life because I'm not focused first on building long-term income. We'll talk more about this. I'm sorry, short-term income. We'll talk more about this here in a minute. But that's priority one, right? Active income today. How do I pay my bills? How do I eat? How do I live today? Priority two is wealth for tomorrow, right? This is the legacy piece. This is generational. This is retirement. This is, you know, thinking into the future. The reason why I generally in real estate say that I don't like the active income strategies is not because they're bad strategies. It's because they don't build wealth. I can make a lot of money, but that wealth comes through ownership. and the various ways that we can own assets and allow them to appreciate over time. And so that's what this priority is how do I build wealth for tomorrow? How do I build ownership through equity, appreciation, debt pay down, tax advantages? This is about net worth, not net income. This is anybody who is playing the long-term game is thinking 10, 20, 30 years down the road. This is why I love real estate, by the way, because in 20 years, everybody looks like a genius when it comes to real estate. I don't have time to tell you the full story of my first deal, but I bought my first deal in November of 2007. I think we all know what happened in 2008, and I effectively it took me 10 years to the month to sell that property for $2,500 more than I paid for it. If I would have waited just another 4 years, that property sold again for double. And so, what it taught me was that time covers a multitude of sins, and that wealth comes through ownership over the long haul. And so, whether I get a great deal, obviously, I'm an investor. I'm looking for good deals today. But even if I make a deal that isn't good, or something happens that's out of my control, if I wait, I win. That's the long-term wealth for tomorrow strategy. The third line item in the waterfall of priorities is this passivity, or maybe we could even call it freedom, right? Freedom to me isn't a number on a screen or a bank account or a wallet. Freedom is I get to do what I want, when I want, how I want. And that I am not trading my time for money. Time freedom is its own asset class, right? And I think we all agree that at some level, we want to be there at some point in the future. So a strategy that can make you a lot of active income today, is very likely going to be a high activity strategy that consumes 30, 40, 50, 60 hours a week. That's a job, not an investment. Right. I'm not saying it's bad. I'm just saying it's a different strategy. We'll talk about some examples of that. But the question I would ask myself today is honestly, how many hours per week will I actually give to like this strategy I'm building? Not like theoretically, what would I like, but how much am I willing to invest in this? And is my highest priority freedom of time, active income, or wealth for tomorrow? Because the way that we build those things are different. Let me give it to you in real estate because I'm a real estate guy. But this could apply to any number of strategies, private equity, business acquisitions, like fill in the blank with your favorite investment strategy. This can apply across the board. The three that I like to use as the example of this, there are many more, is fix and flips, rental portfolios, private lending, or passive, partnership in external deals. Fix and flips in real estate are a great way to make active income. If I needed to replace $100,000 or even $150,000 in income quickly, I would fix and flip my way to get there. The average national profit on a fix and flip today is between $30,000 and $50,000. So I need to do somewhere between three and four fix and flips to replace a six-figure income. I can do that relatively quickly, but it is a very active strategy. It might help me build a rental portfolio. Like one of the ways that we encourage flippers to move from active income to long-term wealth is, hey, maybe I'm going to flip 10, but I'm going to keep one, or I'm going to flip four and keep one. There's some strategies that you can get into that can make that work, but fix and flipping is excellent for active income. It's modestly helpful because it helps us build capital. But the reason why I always say, hey, I fix and flip a ton, but I flip because I have to pay bills. I hate it as a long-term strategy because wealth comes through ownership. And flipping helps me do that by raising my capital and potentially getting me into better deals that I might be able to choose to keep as a part of my rental strategy. But it's really poor from a time freedom perspective. I put a lot of money, work, energy, my team into fix and flipping. It is the opposite of a passive strategy. When you look at the wealth building tier of the water flow, fix and flips are terrible at that because making a lot of money just creates more figuring out what I'm going to do with that money. As soon as I sell it, sure, I got the money, but now my money isn't doing anything. It's not working for me. I got to figure out what to do with it. So it's a really poor strategy for that. A rental portfolio, on the other hand, is an excellent wealth building tool. Especially if you can find a strategy that's still cash flowing and you can build, like there are, a half dozen or more ROIs connected to building a rental portfolio. I mean, it doesn't even take 100 rentals. I mean, 10, 5 to 10 really quality rentals bought today will be paid off in 20 or 30 years, not by you, but by renters. They will be worth double, maybe triple what they are today, statistically speaking. And they will have grown in the value, tax-free in that environment, meaning that I can leverage that equity at any point without paying tax on what I borrow, because debt is not taxable. It's an excellent wealth building tool. But rental portfolios, anybody who has a rental portfolio and says it's passive is lying about having a rental portfolio. Even if you've got a property management and all those things, it's somebody's still got to manage it, and there's still work to be done. Certainly less work than fix and flipping. But a lot of people get into rentals because they think it's passive, and then they find out very quickly that it's anything but. So great for building wealth, poor for passivity, and not as good for active income. The last one is passivity, right? Fix and flips, really, really poor for that. We already talked about rental portfolio. Poor to moderate, like I said, like you can get really good at it, and you can get it to be more passive, more set it and forget it, but it's never truly passive. But private lending, as an example, is an excellent passive. It's probably the only true passive investment. And for those of you that don't know, private lending is the process of investing in somebody else's deals, taking your money and being either the bank, or investing in a fund, or investing as a partner. There's a lot of different ways you can do it, where you're investing into somebody else's effort to get a deal done. It's the only true passive. It's terrible for active income, right? Because typically, those returns are either deferred to maturity, or if you can structure them in a way where you get monthly interest payments, or however you do that, but it's not certainly going to be as sexy of returns as, say, a fix and flip might be, right? So on that scale, it's not quite as good. It can be great for building wealth, especially if you're alternative. I mean, I have a ton of investors that invest with me because they forgot that their 401k was sitting in some mutual fund or money market savings account earning 3%. And they invest in a private money deal and get 10, 12%. They're stoked about that because the growth is so much better, and it's backed by a physical asset, et cetera, et cetera. So it can be good for wealth building, but it's not the best of the strategies in terms of long-term ownership. But passivity-wise, it is really truly the only true passive real estate investing strategy that I'm aware of. So let's run a couple of case studies here. I think you'll understand this. I won't spend a lot of time here. But we've already talked about this a bit, but fix and flips, continuing the analogy, great income, zero ownership, right? Excellent. I told you, the average fix and flip profit is between 30 to 50,000. Almost nothing for long-term wealth, because wealth comes through ownership. A flipper sells the asset every time and has to figure out what to do with that money. There's no equity compounding, no appreciation, no long-term tax advantages. As a matter of fact, it's arguably one of the worst tax strategies because of capital gains tax. A flip is a well-paying job, make no mistake about it. And if you're looking to replace your income quickly and you're interested in real estate, this is where I start, but it is not where I end. The second one, rentals, right? We've talked about these. I won't spend a lot of time, but this is the generational wealth cheat code. To be really clear, if I haven't been already, my goal is to own everything. If I could never sell anything again, that would be my chief goal, because in 20 or 30 years, my kids are not going to look at any piece of real estate in my portfolio and wonder if I got a good deal or how I bought it. They're going to look at a portfolio that's largely paid off, that is worth twice, maybe three times what I paid for it, statistically speaking. And they're going to think dad was a genius. And that is my secret cheat code to convince my kids I'm way smarter than I am. I want to buy and wait. And I should say this, again, this isn't a real estate presentation, but I should say this: real estate is arguably a terrible way to get rich quick. Real estate is absolutely a get rich slow strategy. And I'm just really, really comfortable with those get rich slow strategies, because even if the market shifts, even if equity shifts around, or I lose value, or we get a big crash, whatever doomsday outcome we're afraid of, the beauty of real estate, unlike any other investment class that I'm aware of, is that the value or the equity can come and go, but the cash flow still remains. People still have to live somewhere. And that's what I love about the generational. This is my favorite step of the strategy, is building that generational wealth. But this is focused on the future. If I buy a piece of real estate today and I'm owning it, I am planning on owning it for a long time, because if I can wait, I can win. The last one, the really only passive strategy that I know of, and this is where private money lending, investing in operators deals, funds, syndications, joint ventures, like all the different things that you can do, this is the only truly hands-off way. And the returns in real estate land, in my experience, are typically 8 to 14%. Sometimes they're a little bit better projections on syndications, sometimes they're worse. The returns are more modest long term than you're going to typically get in a self-managed deal. On a cash on cash basis, right? If you get really good, or total ROI, right? If I put, $30,000 into a fix and flip, get some hard money, kind of go through this thing, and then I make $30,000 in 6 months, well, shoot, like on an annual basis, that's like a 200% return. I'm not going to get that as a passive investor, but what I get is consistent, reliable returns that don't require any of my energy, or very little of my energy and effort, if any at all. To give you guys some context for this is the way that I look at this. I told you we've built a little over $20 million in our portfolio, using none of our own money. We use outside investors, we use creative finance, we use different debt structures. But I use all of my money to invest in other people's deals. And the reason for that is because I'm trying to discipline myself to ensure the difference between the rich mindset versus the poor mindset, or the investor mindset versus the employee mindset, is that I want to make sure that I am not working for my money, but my money is working for me. So when I'm doing all of my active strategies, we manage a lot, and I happen to be a guy that loves the game. I love the hustle. I love the strategy. I love the management. My team is amazing. We're in this season of growth and having fun. I want to be active. I want to do the work. I want to be in it, but I want to use that investor pool that I'm tapped into, to use other people's money to help grow my active strategies. And when I make my money, I want to use that money passively to go into other deals, because I think the apex of investment, in my personal opinion, is passive investment. The apex is when I get mailbox money that shows up on a monthly or quarterly or annual basis, whatever I'm doing, and I did very little, if any, work to achieve it. That's the goal that I get to. So someday I'm going to wake up and I'm going to go, I don't want to manage all this activity anymore, and I'm either going to pass it off to hopefully one of my kids, or I'm going to liquidate it and roll it into something completely passive. But I want to have the freedom to do that. I don't want my income to be tied to me getting up, me finding the deal, me managing the contractors, me doing all of the work forever and ever. I think passive investing is the apex of investment. So this, to me, is why we're stuck. It's indecision is not a personality flaw. It's a predictable result of unranked competing objectives. People that I talk to often, they're like, man, I'm really excited. I want to buy this duplex, this quadplex. I want to buy this apartment building. I want to do this, and that. And I get into the conversation with them and I'm like, so why aren't you doing it? And they're like, well, I just don't really have the time, until I get enough of these to get out of my day job, and then I can really go all in. And I stop them and I go, well, let's talk about that. Because what I heard you just say is that your highest priority is actually to get out of your day job, and yet you're focused on a duplex. And guys, let's be real, the average duplex is going to spit off $200 to $500 a door if you're lucky. And, candidly, when your water heater blows up or your roof goes bad, a lot of that cash flow gets eaten up anyways. Duplexes are great for building wealth, but they're not great for replacing income. But let's just say at 200 bucks a door, you're going to have to buy an awful lot of doors to replace most incomes, right? The magic number everybody always says is 10,000 a month. I feel like it's probably growing to 20,000 a month. But everybody I talk to, they're always like, if I could get to 10,000 a month, if I could just get to 10,000 a month, well, at 200 bucks a door, you got a lot of doors you're going to have to buy that's going to get you there. But 10,000 bucks a month, $120,000 a year, that's three, maybe four flips, right? And so that people get stuck, not because the objective of buying a duplex is bad, but we're getting distracted but from the priority, really managing and meeting the need that's actually higher on the waterfall of priorities before I go into the deeper, more long-term strategies. I'm hoping that this is landing. And so here's how we fix it, right? We clarify, we prioritize, and we execute. Right? I would encourage everybody to sit down and answer this question. What is the order of my waterfall? Is it active income? Is it wealth for tomorrow? Or is it freedom of time? What is the order of those priorities? What order do they waterfall in for you? Because by the way, success for you doesn't look like success for me, and vice versa. Freedom for me may not be your definition of freedom. I don't need a yacht and a private jet to be free. You might. And we have to be able to define that. So we got to clarify, define each objective. What does income, wealth, and passivity actually mean to you in the form of literal numbers? And then force rank them. Not all of them. It's not that you can't achieve all of them. You can't achieve all of them the same way at the same time. Here's the analogy I like to use for this. It's a terrible analogy because I'm not a fisherman, but I think even if you're not a fisherman, you'll get this. If I called you and said, "Hey, let's go fishing today," and you said, "Great, what do we want to catch?" And I go, "Well, let's see if we can get some bass and maybe some tuna." I don't know about you, and I'm not a fisherman, but I know enough to know that those are two very different types of fish that live in two very different bodies of water that probably have different sets of equipment, maybe different types of boat and different types of bait and tackle and all things. Even if I lived in a place like, say, Florida, where I could go to the ocean and I could go to a bass pond in the same day, what are the odds of me catching either of those fish in any given day? Pretty low, arguably. Why? Because my energy is diverted between two different types of fish, two different strategies, two different priorities. But if I said, "Man, I want to go all in on catching as much bass as I can get today," we're going to get the best bass equipment, the best bass boat, the best bass tackle and bait. We're going to go to the best known bass fishing hole, and we're going to go all in on fishing for bass today. That's what clarity and prioritization looks like. It doesn't mean that tomorrow or next weekend we can't go fish for tuna. It just means that until I succeed at what I'm looking at, I'm not going to get distracted by anything else. And that's what execution looks like. So first we clarify, what are the objectives and what do they actually mean? Let's prioritize and let's force rank them in an order, and then let's get out there and let's fish. Let's execute one strategy done well until it's done its job. Then we move down the waterfall. All right, a couple more slides, and then I'm going to end a little early because I'm hoping there's some questions here that I can answer for you. And here's how you force rank your waterfall, in my opinion. Do I need my investments to pay my bills within the next 12 to 24 months? If yes, active income is likely number one. Another question you could ask is, how much do I hate my boss or my W-2? Right? If that's a high priority for you, then good chance you're going to need a lot of active income. Maybe you're facing retirement, right? Obviously, most of you are here, and largely what Entrust does is through the retirement process. That's a different, hey, if I'm facing retirement, what strategy do I need to produce the income I'm looking for in my retirement? Is my real goal a number on my net worth statement in 10 plus years or something my kids inherit? Right? Is my highest objective not to replace my, this is to me, this is where like doctors and lawyers and professionals and people that have been in long-term careers, they tend to not be looking to change their income strategy. They're happy with their income strategy. They got a great career. They got a good income. What they're thinking about is, what's my balance sheet show me in a decade, and what can I give to my kids and my children's children, right? That's where wealth ranks really high for those types of people. And then number three, how many hours a week can I really commit to whatever I choose to do with the job I have, the family I have, and the way my life actually is? It's a very, very important question. And the honest answer for most people is very few. And if your answer is very few, you have to reverse engineer that. Otherwise, what happens is you'll turn your dream into a nightmare, and nobody works their nightmares long term. Another way to say that is, whatever you work will work, but you will not work something you hate. And if you design a strategy or a system that's not aligned with your life's reality or your life's vision or where you want to be in life, you will build a strategy that looks good on paper, but you hate in reality and actually doesn't produce any result you're looking for. And most people will blame the strategy, not realizing that it was actually just an alignment problem, because what you work will work, but you have to be sure that you're aligned with it so that you get excited to get out of bed and do the work. Your ranking in the waterfall is personal. There's no wrong order. The only wrong order is an unranked one, an order where you don't make a decision. The only wrong decision is indecision. And those are the things that we like to point to for long-term outcomes. Here's the good news, guys. You can have all three in whatever sequence. Right? The waterfall isn't about giving up everything forever. It's about the order of operations. We all have to pay our bills, right? Active income funds the long-term wealth. So whether that's going to happen through your day job or through some other active source of income, or you're wanting to make your investment strategy fill that bucket, it has to come first. Because if we're not surviving, if we're not providing, then all of our energy is going to be focused on, is going to be divided between trying to accomplish some arbitrary goal that we said was good and actually paying the bills every month. The next one, of course, wealth built today converts to passivity tomorrow. The better you get at building wealth faster, sooner, ownership sooner, the better you will find yourself positioned to become more and more passive, whether that's through building team, through outsourcing management, or through liquidating into truly passive vehicles of investment. And then, of course, capital deployed. Capital earned actively becomes capital invested passively. We all have to make money in order to have money to be able to accomplish these goals. Each priority executed well funds the next one down your waterfall, but you have to be honest about where you're at in the step of process. All right. So I'll give you just a couple more here, just quick, and I don't know, Munzer can tell us at the end here if this will go out or if we send this out or if you guys can re-review this. But here's just a simple case study, right? If you want to flip your way out of flipping, as an example, right? So people are like, man, I really want to build wealth, but I gotta figure out how to pay my bills. Well, okay, here's your number one active priority is active income. So flip for income. Master a market, use one buy box, replace the W-2, spend the first couple of years becoming a high volume, high profit flipper. Then in the next 2 to 5 years, start converting your flips into rentals and keep doing it. One or two keepers a year for the next 5 years will change everything about the future of your wealth building, as an example. Years 5 to 8, the rental cash flow and equity growth begin to compound, and the flipping continues to fund acquisitions. You begin to start looking at other strategies like leveraging up, 1031 exchanges, refinancing and pulling equity tax-free. There's a lot of different things. And the finish line is that income has built, expenses have digressed to a point where rental income covers the bills and you don't actually have to flip anymore. Now, do I think that that'll actually take 5 to 8 years? Depends upon how aggressive you get and how concise your goal is. I think you could do it in a couple of years, but it really just depends upon the bigger question in that third tier of waterfall, which is, how much time do I actually have to give the strategy? Here's another case study for you. If you want to be in the passive bucket, right? Here, say, and this is many of my investors are in this bucket, right? I got $500,000. I don't want to do work. I want to ride into the sunset of the Riviera, or I want to keep my day job and just get some side money, or I want to grow my retirement account. Whatever bucket of passivity you fall into, if your number one priority is passivity, but you've got capital available, then go place it into a vetted deal. Go put it into a fund. Go invest in an operator. Go invest in a joint venture, and get an average return. Like a private money lender, for example, backed by a piece of physical real estate, is going to probably get somewhere right now in the 10 to 12% range. Maybe some operators are a little less, some are a little bit more, but in that 10%, as an example, that's $50,000 a year in truly passive income. That's pretty stinking good for no effort or work. It's beating the market on average. It's backed by a physical asset, and it's also underwritten against cash flow, not just market conditions. In other words, even if the value drops, it doesn't necessarily mean that your principal balance is at risk. It can be, of course, there's never no risk, but the likelihood is that the cash flow is still producing returns that can continue to provide your returns at scale while the markets shift or correct or whatever cycle you happen to be in. You got no tenants, no contractors, no 2 a.m. calls, and the work really happens up front, right? You got to underwrite the operator, the deal structure, the protections, the capital does the rest. You find a really good relationship with a really good operator, and you can kind of set it and forget it for a long time and get really, really great returns, really great results. Here's a couple of my like mistakes. Or landmines, I would say, that keep people stuck. One of which, of course, is strategy hopping, right? If you're jumping from strategy to strategy to strategy every 3 to 6 months, restarting the learning curve is a huge setback in the action-taking journey. Number two, I've talked about this a lot. Trying to optimize for all three at once means that you're optimizing for nothing at all. And then ranking by what's exciting instead of what's true. I'll tell you really quickly. I have an Airbnb. It's on a lake up in Washington State. We have this beautiful lake house, multi-million dollar home. We bought it as a lifestyle investment, but I'm a real estate investor. So we're gonna Airbnb it, and we're gonna get good cash flow, and it's gonna pay for us to have this beautiful vacation home that we don't that we essentially get for free because Airbnb is gonna pay for it. Well, here's what I'll tell you. I have learned that I hate Airbnb. I don't want to operate Airbnb. It's not my favorite strategy. I don't care about being a super host. I don't want to roll people's towels and make sure that they have warm cloths to wash their face when they walk in the front door. All of the things that come into hosting an Airbnb, we've proven to not be good at. So here's the example. My buddy has a house on the same lake, similar amenities, similar structure, similar layout, same exact lake. Last year, he did $160,000 in Airbnb revenue. We, on the other hand, same house, same type of house, same lake, same amenities, did $90,000 or less in Airbnb revenue. What's the difference? I got excited instead of answering an honest question. Is this aligned with my life's vision? The performance of the asset is not because the lake is wrong or the strategy's wrong or the property's wrong. It's because the operator made a decision to get into something exciting instead of honestly asking the question, do I want to be an Airbnb operator? And now I have an underperforming asset, which for us it works out because we wanted it anyways. And so it's just kind of offsetting the cost. But as an investment strategy, that's terrible advice. Right. If this was my active strategy for an active part of my portfolio that I really wanted to make sure was performing well, I would be having a failing asset because I did something that was exciting, not something that was true to my life and my decisions. If you want to be the exciting Airbnb operator, like my buddy loves hosting, he loves nerding out over creating and curating vacation experiences and getting the best reviews. Well, Airbnb might be perfectly aligned for you. The point is that it's not about what's exciting, it's about what's true. And then lastly, waiting for certainty. Man, if I could say anything loud, as loud as anything else that's been shared today, I would say this the loudest. You will never have 100% of the information, the people, or the answers that you need to make any actionable step forward towards your goals. You gotta go anyways. My experience has been that I have on average 70% of the knowledge I need to get anything done. And the rest of it, I've become an expert in. I know a guy or I know a gal, right? You got a tax question for me. I may not know the answer, but I know a guy. You got a plumbing issue problem for me. I don't know nothing about plumbing, but I know a guy. The what if, what if, what if, what if, what if, what I've become obsessively convinced of, and that I would offer you today is this knowledge or knowing that I can solve any problem if I get the right people in the room. And it doesn't mean that you have to hire a big team. It doesn't mean that you got to build a big institution. It just means that you got to be willing to ask the experts for their help. And I can't give you my experience, but I can lend you my courage. And my courage says that your knowledge is not what's stopping you from succeeding. Action is. And your action is not being blocked by having 100% of what you need to know. Your action is being blocked by your unwillingness to jump out of the boat and see if the water is going to hold you up as you move forward towards your goals. So here's your homework for tonight. And then I will turn it back to Munzer for Q&A. I want you to write it down, right? Write down your three priorities. If you're still sitting on this call, you probably already know what they are. Commit to the ranking. Get with your spouse, significant other, partner, whatever it is, and commit to the ranking. Then define the number one priority as a number. Monthly income target, net worth target, max hours per week. What is the number one priority numerically? Name the strategy that serves that priority. Is it active fix and flipping or active, business acquisitions or whatever your strategy that you're interested in is? Name the one strategy that serves that priority and take action this week. We have this saying called the MINS, the most important next steps. What we're not looking for is home run, knock it out of the park, full field plays. What we're saying is 3 yard plays trump Hail Marys, right? Moving the ball down the field a little bit at a time trumps the Hail Mary approach, and those little bits of action will compound into big results for you over time. But indecision ends the moment you give your goal or your outcome an order. All right. That's all I have for us today. If you want to connect with us, I'm on Instagram. You can email me. You can find us on YouTube. Whether you're ranking your waterfall for the first time or you're ready to execute priority number one, I love talking to people. You can get on my Calendly. We can meet. This stuff is fun for me. I don't have anything to pitch you. It's not like a coaching program I'm trying to sell. I just love, there's an old Zig Ziglar quote that says, you can have anything you want in life if you help enough people get what they want first. And I just work really, really hard to make that true of my life because I believe it. The way we say it in our company, one of our core values is that a culture of generosity always pays for itself. And so it's my belief that if I can help the 40 people that have been on this call today get a little bit closer to your goals, it's going to be really, really difficult for me to believe that I'm not going to be winning too. So feel free to reach out. I'd love to connect, love to help you. Munzer, I will turn it back over to you to wrap us up here.
Michael, thanks so much. Wow, wealth of information here. I don't know about the others, but as much as I enjoyed your presentation and found it very educational, I actually love learning more about you on a personal level. I had no idea you were adopted and your commitment to adoption and non-for-profit. It's very admirable, and I love that.
Oh,
Thank
thank you.
you for sharing that with us. I appreciate it. I don't see any questions, but let's wrap it up. Let's go to the next slide and see. Let me just talk to you about a couple of things real quick, guys. If you're interested in setting up your accounts with us, it's very simple. Three easy steps. You just go online and open up the account. It takes you 5 minutes. You're funding it with either an IRA from another trustee or a 401k plan from a previous employer. Takes about 7 to 10 days, and then now you're ready to direct us to make the investment of your choice that you want to make an investment in. What I say about that is typically it takes from A to Z about 10 to 14 days. Michael has we've run into a couple of times where someone would call and they want investing in, let's say, ABC investment. Okay, what's your account number? I don't have one, and I want the investment done tomorrow. I can't do it. There are steps to be done. And usually the biggest obstacle would be moving money from one custodian to another because no custodian is in rush to do so. So it takes about from A to Z, 10 to 14 days. Keep that in mind, please. Next, please. So Michael asks, yes, we do. We send out the replay and additional resources. So there'll be a follow-up email, which would include our video replay and the slides and more education. We ask all of you guys on our webinar to please register for next September's webinar, State of the Union for Real Estate Investors. They're all very interesting and educational. You want more information about the self-directed IRAs, please go to our website, purely educational. There's no selling whatsoever. Go to our learning center. You'll learn more about what you can and cannot do within your IRAs. Follow us on all the social media outlets for more updates as well. So let's see if there's any questions here for us or for you mostly. I got a question for you, Michael. The proceeds from private equity fall into the short-term capital gains? That's a question.
So I would formally I would direct you to your CPA. But yeah, typically speaking, proceeds on short-term, you know, are viewed as capital gains in my understanding. One thing, you know, as we're talking today, obviously through the lens of self-directed IRA, one of the benefits of using your retirement accounts for those types of investments is that you get the same tax benefits as you would from a 401k or a traditional or Roth IRA in your self-directed. So things like capital gains taxes and all of that can be avoided or deferred through the retirement accounts. But again, I would refer you to your CPA to get specific advice on your financial situation.
Correct. And if I may add, if it's in the context of self-directed retirement plans, everything is deferred. If it's a traditional IRA, and then it's actually, if you do it in a Roth IRA, you don't have to pay any cap gains. But my favorite statement, as Michael said, talk to your CPA, because one thing we don't give is we don't give any sort of financial or tax advice. Another question is, how do you provide asset protection?
I'm assuming you're asking in like a, well, actually, I guess I don't know. If you're asking about as a like a private money lender, for example, your asset protection typically is in the form of a deed of trust on a particular piece of real estate. You know, there's about 1,000 ways to structure these deals, but you know, on a traditional private money note, as an example, you're essentially getting the same asset protection that a bank would get through the form of a deed of trust secured by a property with lender's title insurance. You know, that's one form of securing your asset. If you're investing in other forms of assets, like I think you would need to dive into the legal definitions. Like if you invest in a fund, for example, or a syndication, there's a document called a private placement memorandum that will outline the security, the risks, and the outcomes of that particular fund or investment. And then you have to weigh those risks with your, you know, various forms of counsel.
Great. Thank you, Michael. A question is, what is the minimum investment required?
Every investor, every operator, every deal is different. I would say in most cases, 50,000 is pretty common as a basement entry into real estate deals. But I'll let Munzer confirm this, but as I understand it, there's no minimum. And if we're just talking about getting into a self-directed IRA, there's no minimum investment that I know of there.
Oh, yes. I mean, in terms of self-directed IRAs, there are no minimums. It just what you want to look at it. It's a cost benefit, if you will, because there are some costs associated with fees setting up a self-directed IRA. So at some point, it might not make sense for you to set up an account, let's say, and make a $5,000 investment. Typically, what we say is the break even is at least $20,000. And we see a lot of deals, as Michael alluded to, between the minimum $25,000 up to maybe even 100 or 150,000. Any more questions? I don't see. I have one for you, Michael, real quick. I'm just curious because I've been in this for, it seems like forever, right? In the self-directed IRA world. When we first started, and I talked to investment sponsors, it was them primarily trying to promote the concept of, hey, you know, can you, you can use your self-directed IRA to invest in my offerings or deals. And a lot of them would have a blank face. They have no idea what they're talking about back then. Are you seeing still that, or are you getting clients actually coming to you with IRA funds or retirement plans and saying, hey, Michael, I want to use my IRA or 401k to invest in your deals? Or are you still actively promoting it yourself?
I have almost never promoted. We've largely been word of mouth, referral based. You know, I would say in the space, I see both. The main difference is the structure of the investment vehicle. Some of them cannot be publicly marketed, depending upon their SEC or their Reg D filing, and some of them can be. And so there's some pretty clear lines in real estate land on what we can promote and what we can't promote publicly. I would still say that it's true that the average investor would see a PPM and draw a blank stare. It's my experience and my belief, or at least in my company, that people are not primarily investing in a deal. They're investing first in an operator. And for those reasons, that's why we've kind of coined this Main Street mission. I come from Wall Street land. I don't have an interest in having 1,000 investors. I'm happy with the 30 or 40 of them that I have. You know, with the strategies we have and what we're building, I want to be able to pick up the phone and have a conversation with any one of them. And if I grow to a point where that's impossible to do, then I feel like I'm not helping the Main Street investor. And so I guess to answer your question more concisely, Munzer, I think it depends upon the operator and what they're doing. Some of the big boys are absolutely out there marketing and promoting, and people are contributing their self-directeds to all sorts of different types of funds. But in our world, we don't really market or promote at all.
Great. Thank you. Let's take us to the last slide, please, Michael, as we finish off here. And this way you have, for everyone out there, you have our information to stay connected. Any questions regarding self-directed retirement plans and so on, please reach out to me directly. Any questions about today's presentation or anything else for that matter, please reach out to Michael here. I do want to thank Michael for this very educational hour. And thank you all for joining us. And we hope to see you in next month's webinar. Thank you so much, everyone.
Thanks, guys.